quickly, who will be on his way. Everyone's so busy. Thank you, Debbie. Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. I'm going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Workforce. Today is Monday, May 1st, 2017. And Senator Hansel, so glad you are here. So we're going to change the order of the agenda for those who are watching. We're going to have an informational hearing on House Bill 2005A. And this is the Equal Pay Bill. And I am thrilled to say that we have invited testimony today because we have our fantastic governor here to testify on the bill. However, before we do that, we have a Dash 26 amendment in front of everybody. We had our hearing last week, and we had some interesting questions that were raised. And so an additional amendment has been drafted. Not really significant changes since last week, but clarified a lot of things, and hopefully all the T's have been crossed and I's have been dotted. And so everyone should have received it. It came out at around 11 o'clock or so this morning. So people should have the Dash 26 amendments. But in order to avoid any confusion, Deborah, our committee administrator extraordinaire, is going to go ahead and summarize the Dash 26 amendment for us, please.
HB 2005A.
Oh, wait, did I open up the informational meeting? I don't think that I did. I'm going to open up an informational meeting on House Bill 2005A, and then Deborah will summarize the bill, please.
So you held a public hearing on this bill on Wednesday, April 26. The Dash 26 amendment replaces the measure, so my summary is of the entire bill as opposed to the differences between the Dash 24 and the Dash 26. So the Dash 26 makes unlawful employment practice to discriminate in payment of wages or other compensation on the basis of protected classes, including race, color, religion, sex, sexual orientation, national origin, marital status, disability, age, and veteran status. Provides that employer may pay employees for equivalent work at different compensation levels based on merit, seniority, quantity or quality of production, workplace locations, travel, or bona fide factors such as education, training, or experience if certain criteria are met. It makes unlawful employment practice to screen applicants based on their salary history or to determine compensation based on applicants' or employees' salary history. Allows the use of salary history for internal hires and transfers. Expands remedies for pay equity violations and retaliation for wage inquiries and wage claims to include the right to compensatory and punitive damages and a jury trial. Requires the court to consider certain factors before awarding punitive damages. Limits liability of an employer who has conducted equal pay analysis within the last 3 years and eliminated wage differential for protected classes. It clarifies that plaintiffs have a one-year time limit to bring claims. It extends the time limitation to bring claims by making actionable each payment based on the underlying discriminatory practice. It requires employers to post notice of pay equity requirements and requires BOLI to provide a template of pay equity requirements to employers. It makes salary history provisions effective 91 days after the end of the 2017 regular legislative session, makes compensation discrimination provisions effective January 1st, 2019. A fiscal impact statement was issued, no revenue impact, and the House voted this bill 36-24 on the original.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Governor Brown. We are absolutely thrilled that you are here today. Thank you for coming to testify.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be here in front of you on behalf of House Bill 2005. I'm sorry I couldn't join you last week. I wasn't in Salem, and so I couldn't participate in the hearing, but I know my team did a fabulous job on my behalf. But I know that there have been a number of questions raised about pay equity within state government that I'd like to personally address with you today. So you have submitted to the record in an earlier hearing on this topic a report on pay equity within state government. It shows that the state has not yet achieved equitable pay for all of our employees. I think the report was a wake-up call for every single one of us. Since we have a step system that employees move through in a regular way, I think most of our state leaders, including myself, thought that we had relatively few problems within state government. And compared to the average, that's actually true. But clearly, what the state's pay equity report shows is that there are systemic issues that have impacted our ability to achieve full pay equity, issues that affect so many other employers as well. In my professional life, I know what this feels like. Pay equity is what keeps women in relationships they don't want to be in. It keeps women of color working two or three jobs. It stops women and people of color from getting ahead. It hurts these women, their families, and our communities. Very few businesses intentionally pay women less these days. Instead, the problem is more insidious, and it's harder to tackle. That's why passing legislation that improves pay equity standards in our state is absolutely critical. Currently, the state is implementing an anti-bias training to ensure HR, human resources, and hiring managers are making hiring and pay decisions based on individuals' qualifications, not unknown biases. We are revamping our training programs to ensure that women and people of color are deliberately included in opportunities for advancement. We have begun to review our classification pay levels to ensure we are not systematically underpaying female-dominated classifications. And because of this review, I proposed increasing the pay for administrative specialists relative to other classifications because I believe there is an equity issue with this group's current pay. This isn't easy work. Many businesses have testified to this, but it's very, very important, and it says a lot about who we are as a state. Addressing and improving pay equity demands a two-pronged approach. Not only must we better track and tackle pay equity issues among similar job classifications, we also must make equitable strides toward better recruitment and retention efforts between different job classifications. Recently, we learned Oregon is one of the first states in the nation to approach the issue of pay equity from both a racial and a gender perspective, according to Portland State University that conducted the state's pay equity study. I am hopeful that this more comprehensive approach will lead to meaningful systemic changes. That's why I look forward to signing a strong pay equity bill into law that will ensure all of our Oregon businesses take a hard look at their books and begin to tackle the systemic pay inequity that still exists throughout Oregon today. Thank you very much. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Governor Brown. Does anybody have any questions? Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you
so much for
coming to
testify.
Appreciate your hard work on this issue.
Okay. So I'm going to close the informational hearing on House Bill 2005A, and we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2186. And Deborah, can you please summarize the bill?
House Bill 2186 was introduced at the request of the House Interim Committee on Business and Labor for Special Districts Association of Oregon. It's the first time you're hearing this bill. The bill allows the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to certify a self-insured employer group created by intergovernmental agreement under ROS 30.282 as a self-insured employer group for purposes of workers' compensation insurance. There's no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and the House voted 58-0. Support the bill.
Okay. Thank you. And Debbie appears with the piece of paper I need. So, Ms. Cena Squires, please, who I need to apologize to again for having her wait through the whole hearing last week, only to then have to return. So, thank you for being patient.
No problem, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires, on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon, I believe I've met with each one of you already in your offices about this bill, but just to get some legislative testimony on the record, this bill was brought to the legislature by our association. We formed the Special Districts Association in 1978. We consist of a 950-member association that provides single services to residents throughout the state of Oregon. There are about 26 different types of districts: fire, water, sewer, irrigation, ports, library, parks and recreation. One thing that's different as far as special districts type of local government is that we do not have home rule charter authority like cities and counties. So not all of our districts are afforded the opportunity to adopt ordinances. We all are able to adopt resolutions, and that comes into play why we need this technical fix to this bill. So in 1985, our members were seeking alternatives to liability, property, casualty, and workers' compensation for insurance purposes. Part of the problem was that most of our districts were insured via SAFE and felt that the prices were high, but more importantly, they would not cover our volunteer firefighters back then. And so that was a service that we wanted to make sure that we offered to our association members. And so at that point in time, we looked at forming a self-insured public pool, and the association formed what's called the Special Districts Insurances Services Trust out of SDAO. And we formed that under the provisions of ORS 30.282 sub 3, which allows two or more local public bodies to jointly self-insure via intergovernmental agreement. In 1988, WCD certified us as a self-insured group, and we used our Special Districts Insurance Services tax ID number as we filed with WCD. A little over a decade ago, WCD contacted us and said, hey, we've got two different tax ID numbers in our system for you. We have SDIS and we have SDAO. Which one do you prefer that we use? At that time, we contacted our legal counsel. Our legal counsel said, since SDAO was the forming entity, please use SDAO. SDIS came out of the association, so WCD changed our information into their system to be SDAO. Then fast forward to 2012 when our board and our trust took a look at all of our bylaws and our formation and then pursued verification via the Internal Revenue Service that we were in fact actual nonprofit entities. We pursued these letters of ruling, IRS 115 rulings that confirmed our tax exempt status. And in the course of that, the IRS told us, yes, you have, of course, are both entities are tax exempt, but when you're conducting insurance business, please use your SDIS tax number. So we went to the Workers' Compensation Department and said, hey, could you change our tax ID number back? And they said, we'd certainly like to do that, but under the provisions of ORS 656, 430, we're not sure that you qualify anymore as an, if you look on page 2 of the bill, line 18, an intergovernmental entity created under ORS 190. An intergovernmental entity must be formed via ordinance. And as I started this conversation, I said that we can't all adopt ordinances. We can adopt resolutions and have all done so to form our public pool and have all of those documents in place. So instead, we are adding a provision that we worked on with the Workers' Comp Department during the interim to the statute that says that adds or is a self-insurance program under ORS 30.282 sub 3, which we can comply with since we all have resolution authority. So with that, we'd urge your support of the bill. We'd like to continue to provide our low-cost insurance services through our association to our members.
Okay. Well done.
Comment?
I feel a little sorry for her having to do all a lot of work for this very small change. Does anybody have any
just
questions?
A comment?
Yes,
I'm just Mrs. amazed Sarah that mentioned. We some of the rules and regs that we have make things so complicated, and it takes for a very simple thing that you want to do.
Yes. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and close a public hearing on 2186. And then I wanted to, we have a light day today, folks. After last week working so hard. So before we close, I wanted to, for on Wednesday, it's already up on OLIS, but just to remind everybody that we're going to have work sessions already on some of the bills we've heard that have come over, and those I encourage folks to look at those. It's I can go through the numbers, but 2192, 2335, 2336A, and 2337A, and 2338A. We'll have work sessions of those on Wednesday, and then we're going to have public hearings on some other bills that we think also will be a little bit more simple, 2263, 2265A, and 3008A. So I just ask that when you come on Wednesday, be ready to go, and we should be good there. So we're going to go ahead and our next meeting Wednesday, May 3rd, and we're going to adjourn the Senate Committee on Workforce.